This is Will Friedle from Pod Meets World. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. Home decor, that's a different story. In HGTV's new competitive series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
If you're enjoying this independent podcast, I'd really appreciate it if you could take a few moments to do a review, like, share and subscribe. And if you'd like to see extra content and show your support, head to the Patreon. The link is in the show notes. Narcissists lie. Sam Vaknin lies. But on occasions, he does tell the truth. Filmmaker Mark Vicente caught him on a good day. Perhaps vulnerable day might be more appropriate. And asked Sam a simple question. Are narcissists serving a purpose in the chain of life? His answer is probably the most profound I've heard him say.
The world would be better off without narcissists and psychopaths. End of story. It's a very concise and simple statement because it's true. Anyone who says otherwise is ignoring the lessons of history, is glamorizing and glorifying narcissists and psychopaths because they're in positions of power and hold the purse strings, or because it's the bon ton in a narcissistic and psychopathic society to be a narcissist and a psychopath. But history is unequivocal. Whenever you place a narcissist or a psychopath in charge, whenever you give a narcissist or a psychopath power of any sort, however limited, the end result is a disproportional devastation, a ruination of everything, the narcissist included, and everyone around the narcissist, and everything the narcissist had touched, everything he had initiated, everything he had built. Narcissists construct things and then destroy them. Narcissists have short spans or short stretches of success, followed by magnificent failures, so to speak, spectacular failures. Spectacle, it's again a spectacle. Even the failure is a spectacle. Hitler constantly was referring to his downfall as Götterdämmerung, the twilight of the gods. So there is no way to collar a narcissist, to co-opt a psychopath, to harness their energy for good use. We have these scholars and academics who talk about high-functioning narcissists and productive narcissists. I have no idea what they're talking about. Absolutely no idea. I don't know a single case in history, including corporate history, political history, social history, romantic history. I'm not aware of a single case where it ended well, even in the lifetime of the psychopath, let alone afterwards, or the narcissist. So the answer is an unequivocal no.
He's as evil as he is clever. It pains me to say that, and it pains me to be analysing this monster so closely. But the whole point of the documentary and this podcast, as well as stopping Sam from harming more women, is to educate all of you so you can see the signs, know when to run, and how to protect yourself from predators. This was the sole purpose of Richard Grannan when he teamed up with Sam, to protect people by educating them, and as a duo, they were a winning combination.
I've never been applauded on the way in before, Sam. I don't know what these people are expecting.
They were not applauding you, they were applauding me.
Oh. That would make sense. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming out this evening. We will be...
That was the reception they received in Prague. You can hear how comfortable they are together. During the filming of the documentary, they spoke highly of each other, and Sam recognised the benefits of working with a psychology graduate who understood narcissistic abuse from his own childhood.
These are dialogues in which we have a kind of division of labour. I introduce cutting-edge new concepts, mine and others, not only mine. And then Richard has a knack, the considerable talent of simplifying and popularizing extremely difficult and intricate concepts in ways that even I understand. So we are a great team together. And Richard adds layers which I think no regular psychologist can. Richard has a very varied life experience. And he is in constant touch with thousands of people who seek his help, address questions to him. Every day, I think, he has like a 1 hour or 2 hour Instagram questions and answers session. I do my best to avoid people because I have pity on them. But Richard is in touch with people. So he's kind of my liaison to the outside world. And I'm his research assistant. I scour the literature and come up with new concepts of my own. And so we're a great team, I think.
Despite Richard being on the receiving end of Sam's many rage attacks, he accepted Sam for who he was, or pretending to be. Remember, this interview was before he knew anything about what Sam was really using their seminars for.
My personal relationship with Sam is warm. It's as you've seen, like we joke around a lot. We are friends. I don't have a problem with the fact that that has to occur within certain boundaries and certain limitations. I respect Sam. There's no question in the relationship of who has the superior intellect or who has the superior knowledge. I'm not competing with Sam, where I think a lot of people feel driven to, which is dumb. The guy reads research papers for fun whilst we're all sat around watching dopey stuff on Netflix. He's studying because that's who he is. That's what he likes to do. So I've never gotten confused with that. I had a private school education. I was lucky with that. And I was around professors and lecturers for university. So I haven't got a problem with saying, okay, this is the relationship. You're the person who knows about this subject. You're the expert in the field. You know more than me. I can converse with you respectfully, ask you questions that I'm genuinely interested about. I genuinely find them fascinating. It's not an act. I'm not pandering to him. And he's happy with that. So I get something from the relationship, he gets something from the relationship, and beyond that, we share privately personal elements of our lives and offer each other counsel and advice or just a listening ear. So yeah, we're close in that regard.
Even though Sam struggled to use the word friend, he very much valued Richard. He was raising his profile, earning him a lot of money, and giving him face-to-face access with more potential targets all over Europe.
I'm not sure the word friendship applies, principally because narcissists, myself included, are not capable of positive affectivity. Positive affectivity is a highfalutin way of saying, you know, affection, compassion, love, attachment, bonding, etc. These are positive expressions of emotions, of underlying emotions. So we call them positive affectivity. Narcissists are capable only of negative affectivity, which is anger, rage, envy, you know, negative things. So no narcissist is really capable of friendship. There's a confluence of interests. There is fun to be had. There's entertainment. It's entertaining to work together. On Richard's side, perhaps there is some kind of attachment. I'm much older than him. Possibly I'm a father figure of some kind. Definitely an intellectual father figure. And there is inevitable competition between two people in the same field, but it's a good-natured competition, I think, except when I go off the rails. And I think we accommodate each other's needs. Richard is exceedingly patient and tolerant. It's a bit bizarre, because he appears, you know, he's with muscles, and he appears to be the typical bouncer. But he's very gentle-hearted and kind and tolerant and patient and persevering And I need this kind of thing because I fly off the handle, I have rage attacks, I'm hyper-vigilant and hypersensitive to any perceived slight, or as Jan can attest, poor guy, I unleashed on him, and so on and so forth. And Richard just takes it in stride. In all our relationship, it was 4 or 5 years already, maybe 5 or 6 years actually, there was only one time that he cut me off. I would have done it 200 times. He did it once. And above all, Richard is an intelligent interlocutor. I have difficulties finding such. He grasps almost instantly what I'm saying, and that's not easy. And that's not a grandiose statement. It's a statement of fact. It's not easy to follow my train of thought, and it's always multi-layered, references to a dozen disciplines and so on. He grasps it instantly. He is capable of ping-ponging with me. You know, his feedback is crucial. He brings out the best in me intellectually. He stimulates me to new ways of thinking. And many of the new ideas that I've had are directly attributable to the stimuli provided by Richard. So it's something I cherish a lot. And I would do many things for Richard. So perhaps you could call it friendship. The emotional or affective component is missing. But the behavioral one is identical to a typical friendship.
They had an understanding, and Richard defended Sam against his critics.
He's a living, breathing human being. He has a character, how he comes across online on YouTube videos, and then there's the real person when you meet him face to face. He's had a huge impact on my work. I mean, all the decent insights that I have to offer people related to narcissism, borderline, and psychopathy have come from conversations with him or through watching his videos. I don't watch anybody else. I can't be bothered. My fascination with the subject is not limitless. Trauma interests me, narcissism less so. But Sam comes out with original material. He doesn't pander to the audience. He doesn't go for likes and follows. He just tells the truth as he sees it. So to me, by my value system, he's far more decent as a human being than all these, you know, people spouting trite aphorisms and making their audiences feel comfortable that they're the good guys and the narcissist is the bad guy. Because it's not meaningful to define it in that way. So I have more respect for him. He treats me with more civility than most people I know. Not all, but most people I know. He's a civilized, decent, honorable guy. He has his own ethics. But yes, he is personality disordered, undoubtedly. He's not mentally well, by his own admission.
As you heard earlier in the series, at the same time as the victim started reaching out to the filmmakers, they also contacted Richard, and his world came crashing down. The man he once called a friend was actually a monster.
So what you have to understand is, I've been living in a reality where this creepy Nosferatu vampire routine that Sam Vaknin has been doing, the reality I was in is like, oh, this is just part of the Sam Vaknin dog and pony show. He's pretending to be super evil, but he's really not, because he's self-aware. Then I get contacted by this group of women, and what I get is this story from all of them, fairly consistent story, and it's a story of outright financial and sexual exploitation. And when we're talking sexual, the most demented sexual practices you can imagine, deliberately humiliating and degrading them, and then leveraging them afterwards for cash. So what's actually been going on, while I think he's putting on an act of being evil, is he's leveraging the online persona that he's got as a psychologist and as a psychology professor and his YouTube platform and his Instagram platform to fish for, target, and bait individual vulnerable women, to lure them in and then begin them in this cycle of financial and sexual exploitation, which has a path that you can track that he's used on each and every one of the female victims that I've spoken to. So I was appalled when I found that out. So I'm trying to backtrack and say, well, when's this begun then? Because I started working with them in 2015. And they say, by their estimations and by their investigations, that since 2015 to 2022, we're talking about 25 to 30 women at least that have been through this process with Sam Vaknin. So the problem that we've got is that the women who Sam Vaknin has abused, they don't want to come forward. They don't want to go to the police. They don't want to be on camera. They don't want their faces to be seen. They don't want their names out there. I don't blame them. I mean, they feel a tremendous amount of guilt and shame for what they believe incorrectly they've consented to. They didn't consent to it. They were brainwashed into it, and they were coerced into doing these things. He's used a lot of very strange sexual practices to break down their ego boundaries, to trauma bond them, and to get them to feel like they've done something wrong. Really gross things, like he's used bottles on them, he's inserted foreign objects into them, he's pissed on them, he's had them have sex with him with a strap on, he's involved them in the most disgusting, depraved sexual practices. Like, he's Jewish. He insisted on one of the women pretending to be a Nazi prison guard, and he wrote the word Nazi pig on her face and drew a swastika on her face before having sex with her. In that case, with that woman, he also suggested that her 11-year-old daughter give him a blowjob to the woman, not to the daughter directly, but to the mother, as a way of introducing the daughter safely to the world of sex and sexuality. The man is a fucking animal, and he belongs in prison.
Hey, I've got the campaign brief ready, built from last quarter's data and the competitive landscape.
Approved. Oh, agents, where would we be without you?
Somewhere with a lot more tabs open.
Create your first Monday agent in minutes at monday.com.
This was captured just weeks after learning of the crimes. His defence of Sam's character previously was now a source of shame.
To hear myself, to look back on videos where I've defended Sam, makes me physically tense up. To hear me say things so woefully naive, to describe him as honourable and to describe him as conscientious, makes me feel physically sick. An awful lot of the things that I found out about Sam in just 6 weeks, frankly, make me physically sick. They make me nauseous. The moving from seeing somebody in one way and then finding out who they really are in such a vulgar, it's been fast, it's been crude, it's not been gentle, has been shocking. I mean, I am in a little bit of a state of shock, and people might think, well, are you an idiot? He clearly told you he's a narcissistic psychopath. And my denial mechanism, my ego defense mechanism starts with yes, but he was different. Yes, but he's self-aware. Yes, but he's hyper-intelligent and he knows what he's doing and he does have a moral core. He doesn't have a moral core. He tricked me. I'm an idiot. I was tricked completely. Hook, line and sinker. Not just tricked, brainwashed. I've been brainwashed for years. He wants to damage them in ways that permanently leave them scarred and disabled. He wants fragments of shrapnel stuck in their soul for years that they have to dig out. I can see exactly what he's doing. He is a charlatan, but he does understand psychology and he knows the damage he's doing. He's doing it very deliberately. He wants to make sure that these women can never really enjoy sex again, properly, and never really enjoy love and intimacy again. Now, why he wants to do that, I don't know, but I know he's trying to do permanent and lasting damage to these women of the worst kind. And he told me, I'm trying to drive women to suicide. Sounds hyperbolic, but what I've seen, if he's not trying to drive them to suicide, he's certainly trying to drive them to self-loathing and self-harm.
One day, while Mark and the crew were filming with Richard driving around, a fanatical supporter of Sam called.
This is one of his flying monkeys right now. Do you want me to answer it?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, this is Richard.
Speaking.
Richard, Grant, yeah. You can't keep doing what... Yeah, you can't keep doing what you're doing, Richard. Your bribery and your death threat, I've reported all everything. Sam is hunting me out. You can't keep doing what you're doing. You need to go see a healthcare professional. You're mentally ill.
Hello?
The smear campaign and abuse from Sam's supporters continues to this day. I first had contact with Richard on a joint call with Mark, but I didn't meet him until I got off the plane after returning from Macedonia, as you heard earlier in the series. Although he diminishes the impact on his life in comparison to what Sam did to his female patients, he is still very much another victim to add to the body count. So a couple of weeks after the confrontation, I had an in-depth conversation with Richard to understand his background and why it made him perfect prey and simultaneously hugely beneficial to Sam.
I help people overcome emotionally abusive relationships with a focus on narcissism, borderline and psychopathy.
And that's not an obvious career choice for people to make out of school. What was your path and journey to your chosen profession?
So I had what would charitably be called an unsafe childhood. My father was eventually imprisoned for childhood sexual abuse. It was chaotic. And I got very interested in psychology and philosophy at a young age because I was trying to figure out what was wrong with the world and why evil existed. I think that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to make order, some sort of sense of meaning. And then I went to school and eventually went to university. I studied psychology at university. I was going to join the army as an officer and go to Sandhurst. But the day before my final RCB, I was in a gay club and I got glassed in the face. I was in a gay club because me and my friends went there because we thought if we go to it was in Chester. I don't know what it's called now. There was a chain of them. There was like a pub chain. And we said, if we go there, the scallies are going to clock that we're private schoolboys and we'll get filled in. But if we go to the gay club and they had their girlfriends with them, it's 2-for-1 on drinks and they'll be playing dance music. So let's go there. So we went there for a dance and a lad had gone in there specifically to do some gay bashing. That was his intention for the night. So he attacked me. He glassed me. The doorman went and caught him and he got 9 months in prison. He got off with ABH because he said he'd forgotten he had a glass in his hand when he glassed me. He said he was trying to slap. We had him on CCTV. We walked across the dance floor. You can't hear it on the CCTV, but he says to me, "You dance like a faggot." And I went, "Yes, I've had a lot of practice," which I thought was terribly droll. And he headbutted me and glassed me. So that was a bit of a traumatic experience for me. Because I'd not seen face to face that kind of evil intent, like the idea that he'd gone out in cold blood, gone into a gay club specifically to do that. And then from there, I took time off from joining the army. I said to the recruiting officer, I need 6 months and then I needed 12 months. And then in that period, I met Dorman from Liverpool and I got pulled into the nightclub scene in Liverpool and I did that for about 10 years or so, something like that. Through that I started teaching self-defense. I was combining psychology principles with self-defense tactics. It was a project called Street Fight Secrets. It did very well in its little niche. And then in 2012 YouTube decided that what I was teaching was too violent. And so they deleted the whole channel. Now, up to that point, because people had already been asking me, martial arts type people and law enforcement soldiers, they'd been asking me about their interpersonal relationships on the side. They'd say, "I don't want to go to a psychologist, but I don't mind asking you because you're one of us," kind of thing. One guy said to me, "I'm not going to a fucking shrink." And I said, "Well, you should do because I'm not qualified for this." And he said, no, "I'll talk to you. I'll tell you." I was like, okay. So then I decided to expand that. And the aim of the project in 2012 when it began, Spartan Life Coach, was to help men understand codependency and people pleaser syndrome. So you could have men who were very strong in their professional life. They could be fighters, they could be special forces, but they were weak in their personal life. And then that sort of grew into looking at what type of people predate upon nice people or weaker willed people, let's say. And of course, that's narcissists and psychopaths. Then as I tracked the course of narcissistic psychopathy, of course, you end up in childhood trauma. So I had to learn about childhood trauma and I had to learn about complex post-traumatic stress. As I was learning about that, I realized that this whole project was a manifestation of my own unconscious. My father only ever showed me attention if I acted like a little philosopher. So that was my interest in philosophy. It wasn't a genuine interest. It was to please my father. And my mother would have been a 30 to 40 year old white woman who was stuck in a relationship with a narcissistic psychopath. And I'd be sat at the kitchen table with her and she'd be using me for therapy. That was the basis of psychology. It wasn't ever an authentic interest. My client base that I built was 30 to 40 year old, mainly white women who were trapped in a relationship with a narcissistic psychopath. So as I've done my own therapy over the years, I've realized that the project is a manifestation essentially of my unsafe childhood. I'm still trying to rescue my mother.
Wow.
There you go.
I knew that wasn't going to be a short answer and I kind of knew some of that journey, but, and I know you're used to repeating this story, which I do with some of my own stuff, and I can say it very factually, but I just want to acknowledge with you, I'm sorry for what you've gone through in your life. The childhood stuff is, and then to be glassed in a club the night before a really significant milestone and point, you know, a real turning point in your life. I don't like to subscribe to the every shitty thing has a silver lining and a meaning, but I do think sometimes things do happen that force us onto a trajectory. And if we're, you know, thinking along the lines of us having purpose in life, then it has well and truly, all the things that have happened to you have put you on this course of purpose to help people. I think it's really interesting. Masculinity is something that's talked a lot about, and toxic masculinity, and I think it all has to go down to the little boy. Little boys being told that they're allowed to feel, they're allowed to show emotions, to feel safe. And, you know, well, I mean, just reading children in general, girls and boys, we are programmed from a young age to perform particular roles and to be a particular way. So I think it's really essential to do work with men. And also very interesting that you're just repeatedly saving your mother. Just, yeah, but I'm sure you've done so much good work. Sam Vaknin, tell me how you first heard of this man, met him, became involved in working with him.
So I don't only have a fetish for saving women. I have a fetish for saving men as well. And Sam Vaknin, I think I first had contact with him maybe as far back as 2014. It was back in the days when on YouTube you could send DMs to each other, to different channels. You've not been able to do that for a long time. And I was referencing him in my videos. And what I saw in Sam was a very intelligent guy who was deliberately fostering a negative image online to garner a particular type of attention, which was hateful. So he was hated back then. And his comment section was just full of derision and full of contempt for him. And I felt sorry for him. How many tragic stories begin with the words, I felt sorry for him, or I felt sorry for her? And this is one of them. And so I think I first met him in 2015. And then we first worked together in late 2015. We ran a seminar together. But that's how I met him, to answer your question.
How did he respond to you? Did you go in as a, hey, I find you fascinating kind of, you know, because obviously you would know his pathology, that you'd know that you'd need to appeal to his ego. Did you go to him, you know, with a, I'm interested in working with you, or I read flattery, or what was the entry point?
Flattery. Most likely. I'd been sent, so I was raised in Portugal up until the age of 12 in international schools, which are very liberal. And my lifestyle was extraordinarily liberal when I was growing up. And then I was thrust into the private school system at age 13 in the UK because the education I was getting there just wasn't good enough. So I learned how to deal with high IQ, big ego teachers and professors from a young age, and to work around them. And I saw him as one of them. And then I went to university and I had to deal with the same thing. And I didn't see it as a big deal. I saw it as a part of being an academic. You just have to work around people's egos. And so, yes, I handled him. Yes.
And when you first met him, was he what you expected?
He was... But he came with Lydia, and that was an unexpected dynamic. I knew the online persona and the real world persona, and they were both personas. I knew I wasn't seeing the real him. We're very much at odds with each other. There was a documentary about him called I, Psychopath, which I refused to watch because I'd been told it was a hit piece. And then after I met him, I did watch it. Because the dynamic between him and Lydia didn't match this idea that he's a narcissistic psychopath and she's a brainwashed, mind-controlled zombie. She was very vocal. She was very aggressive.
Get up from here and fuck off from here.
Why are you getting angry?
Because you don't listen to what I'm talking about.
She interrupted frequently when we were talking. And he made a homosexual pass at me during our first conversation. Yeah, it was weird. It was one of these things where somebody says something to you and you're so shocked. He used a really weird metaphor and Lydia was there smiling. So he said something like this. He said something like, if a person is normal and they meet a narcissist, they would be repulsed by them in the same way that if you were not homosexual and I suggested gay sex with you, you would be repulsed. And I was like, that's a really strange allegory to draw. And I've been in high threat situations before. And I was like, that felt like a pressure test. That was like, that was a jab to see how I would respond. And I was bewildered. I was like, oh Jesus, what? And Lydia was there for that. And she didn't, that was the time she didn't complain. She didn't interrupt. She just sat with this weird, creepy smile on her face. So I was like, okay. The dynamic that they're projecting to people is not the dynamic that is real, that is really going on for them. That was the first meeting.
Just to be clear for people listening, this is an important thing to say. You are heterosexual. The attack on the gay club was because you'd gone to the gay club with your friends.
I'm heterosexual, yeah.
And the reason I'm clarifying that is that Sam's pass at you, he may have made, if you've told him about the attack, he might have made the assumption that you were gay, or he was testing to see if you were, or the fact that you're a very well-presented man, nicely dressed, well-groomed, there might be assumptions there.
So there's all of that. I can be camp. I can be theatrical. I can be a lot of like the positive aspects that you might get from gay culture, which obviously is not my culture, but I have had gay clients without the narcissism that seems to be a big problem there. Like the stereotype, yes, of somebody who's charming, somebody who's nice. I like to dance. I'm not an aggressive, like, I'm a man and this is what I'm into, and I can show my vulnerability. And it's not just Sam that has thought that. Like, multiple people have thought maybe I was gay or bi over the years, and I don't care. It doesn't bother me. I'm like, well, let me just be a question mark. There's only one way to find out. But yes, I think he thought, based on the attack and the way I presented myself, that I could be bisexual or gay, yeah.
So that really would have been his first boundary push with you.
It's such a long time ago. He probably, yes, let's say yes. Yeah, let's say yes. Sam gets his boundary pushing in early. So probably he would have arranged to meet at 1 o'clock at somewhere in London and then changed at the last minute and demand I go 5 miles to, probably he would have done that as well.
Which is exactly what he did with me too.
It's to maintain a baseline of destabilization. So good judo players, good jiu-jitsu players, they're constantly testing your base. And that's what makes them good, because they can't just throw you. They have to destabilize you first. So there's a permanent underlying, oh, you think you know where you're at? Bang, now you don't. Here's a shot of adrenaline. Here's another shot of adrenaline. Here's another shot of adrenaline. Peace, 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 drama, drama. Peace, 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 drama, drama. That's the tactic. That's what creates so much emotional dysregulation across time.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. Reese, our content agent, wrote the copy based on our best practices, like mentioning Monday.com 3 times. That was the second. Johnny, our coordination agent, built the timeline and kept everyone aligned. Olivia, our human creative director, stayed in the loop because agents are great, but they don't always know when a joke lands. She had one note: tell listeners it only takes minutes to build an agent. So, minutes. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
So you start working with them and you make actually a great duo, because essentially we've got you, who would be, you know, from childhood a victim of narcissism and studied psychology, and then you've got a narcissist who's also studied psychology. So you've got the two of you, well, his credentials are in question, but let's just say for all intents and purposes, to your audience, you've got two psychologists coming from both angles. So it was a winning combination for people to go and learn. And is that the main, you know, that was your main thing, was to educate people? You did it online and in person.
There's a couple of objectives. There was the saving him from his own masochistic desire to be loathed by everybody. So there's a bit of media training that went on. I was like, you know, this, he used to do, and the videos are still out there. He used to just do flat to camera. This is what's happening. This is what you need to know. And this is the end of this. And so this whole thing of him smiling to camera and joking and stuff, I helped him to develop that, to grow his YouTube base. What the usefulness for my followers was, is that he's really the only person out there who's developing anything new and interesting about how narcissism is structured and how it plays out. He has nothing to offer as far as healing goes, but he has a lot to offer in terms of deeper insights into, and it's cutting edge. And I don't take that away from him. It still is. It's cutting edge. Nobody else is doing what he's doing. So I wanted my followers to open their minds to what he was saying. And then I would take what he was saying is fairly poisonous and acerbic and drives people to despair. And then I would take it and I'd say, okay, so he's defined the problem. Let me give you the solutions to the problem. That was the yin and yang of the dynamic, or what I was hoping for anyway.
Mr. Vaknin, I have a question for you.
The answer is no.
Damn it. I will offer you Jaffa cakes.
The answer is yes.
There is...
This was behaviour modification, by the way.
Who asked for manipulation tactics?
Yes, there exactly. You go. Jaffa cakes.
Jaffa cakes.
And I'm sure the feedback after your seminars or presentations or whatever you want to call it would be people saying, wow, I have learned so much. Thank you. This has helped me.
Mainly. I mean, sometimes Sam would upset people, and or they would upset Sam. He loves to get upset. It's like his favorite thing. So there's a lot of nannying him at seminars. The first Liverpool seminar we did, I wanted to present me, Sam, Saturday, me, Sam, Sunday, to keep it interesting. But he wanted to turn it into a competition of who got the most ticket sales. So he said, Richard does all day Saturday. and we'll keep those ticket sales in one compartment. Sam does all day Sunday, and we'll keep those ticket sales in a separate department. And I, this is a long time. This is back in 2016. We presented at Liverpool John Moores University. And I said, that's a terrible idea. Just let people come and let's both speak. And he was like, he insisted. He was like, no, this is what I want to do. And then two things happened. On Saturday, he came to me and he said, your presentation is so good. You have PowerPoints. You've done PowerPoint presentations all day. And you've kept people so well entertained for like 5 hours nonstop. He said, I just don't have enough material. I don't have enough material. Would you please cover the first hour tomorrow morning for me? And I was like, for fuck's sake, I'm knackered. You've had me talking all day. So stupidly, I said, yes. So I presented for the first hour and I've got this on camera. He jumps up from his chair and sprints out and slams the door open and slams the door behind him. We take a break and I say to Lydia, what the fuck's going on? Oh, darling, he thinks you are stealing his time, darling. I said, you were there when he said to me yesterday, cover the first hour. He forgets. I was like, what the fuck is this? He's out in the car park. I said, Sam, I paid business class flights and a nice hotel for you and your wife. And this is the amount you're being paid, as you always request, cash in an envelope. This is what, if you want to get paid, go and do the seminar. And you know what he said to me? Fuck off. Fuck off. He told me to fuck off. And I was like, okay, here's what's going to happen now. I'm going to go in and I'm going to do the rest of this seminar. And that money that I have sat in my car under the seat is staying with me. And you'll see not a penny of it. That's what's happening next. And he went, and then started shouting at Lydia. I told you, blah, 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 blah. And then he stormed back in, delivered a seminar. He was extremely aggressive. And we had a documentary team in. And he was standing there and he was enraged. So he was like, I love to tear people apart. It is pleasurable for me to destroy people. I am sadistic. I love to see you in pain. And some of the people who were present there were crying. That documentary gets released 2 months later. He goes fucking berserk. He's sending abusive texts, emails and phone calls to the documentary makers and to me saying, you made this documentary to discredit me. And I said, how are you discredited? And he said, well, you've put in the documentary what I said. And I said, yes, the microphones were on and so were the cameras and we have recorded what you fucking said. That's what's up. He was also furious and saddened that I'd gotten more sales than him. And so I'm telling you this and telling people this. This is what happened for 8 years, 6 years working with him. And he set the standard in 2016. So he'd be furious and he'd be aggressive and then he'd go sad. And he would say, people loathe, he'd come to me, sad little boy. It's like dealing with multiple personality disorder. Sad little boy Sam comes to me and says, do you see 20 more people bought tickets for you than for me? They love you. They hate me. They loathe me. They despise me. They adore you. You're a god to them. Blah, blah, blah. And I'd just be like, for fuck's sake, take the money and do your job. Take the money and shut up. And that set the standard for us working together. It was just endless drama, but I felt like it was worth it. I felt like, yeah, it's good. It's my job. I've dealt with high conflict personality since I was a kid. It's good material, and I kept going with him for a while. I'll stop there.
I think it's important for people to understand this. This is not a straightforward, this is a colleague, this is someone that you work, this is incredibly complex how to handle and deal with them. And I very much know about that. In my industry of television, there's a bunch of people who are, you know, in another setting, they wouldn't last a day. Certain behaviours would not be tolerated, but because of, you know, talent or whatever, or their role or, you know, how high up they are, it is tolerated. So just to be clear, you're not two therapists turning up at a place of work clinic where you've got your own patients and, you're polite to one another. It's not that at all. This is a very intricate, complex, ever-changing situation with this man over many years.
Yes, it is. And I never offered therapy. And I always thought it was a bit brazen of him. I think it's quite expensive. I think it's $500 an hour to offer therapy. He was always very evasive about his qualification. So what I offered was coaching. And I stopped at the end of 2016 because, you know, I wasn't getting supervision. I didn't realize how, I didn't know at that point about secondhand trauma. I was getting a lot of clients with borderline personality disorder who were winding me up. And so I just stopped. I was like, I'm not cut out for this. So yes, it wasn't a boundaried, clear cut relationship, no.
Did he ever discuss with you the fact that he, you know, with that did have clients? Did he ever, like, was he on his phone or, oh, I'm having to deal with this person, they're going, did yes. he ever discuss that?
Yes. Yes, rarely. But yes, he did. He did. Sometimes we'd do a Zoom call and he'd say, oh, I've just had an exhausting, highly narcissistic client for a two-hour session or something like that, yeah. Or he'd brag. I have a multimillionaire Russian client. I have a multimillionaire. You know, he'd brag about his high-profile client.
Mm. When did you start to feel, and also think, to be clear, you were kind of under his spell at this point. He essentially groomed you. He essentially love-bombed you. And a lot of the behaviours with the outbursts, etc., are in a different context, obviously, but very similar to what he does to all his victims.
Yes. Yes. You're asking me when?
When, I guess my question is, when did you... Were there red flags which you look back on now that you may have ignored about some of his behaviour?
There was one incident, and it meant that I actually stopped talking to him for around 18 or 20 months. We shot a documentary, and then it did quite well. It was on social media usage. It was called Plugged In. We organised a follow-up documentary. So he was due to come to Liverpool.
At this point, Richard had banned Lydia from attending events or filming. Not only was she disruptive by taking the microphone off Richard or Sam to interject in live seminars, but Richard was told by audience members she'd been spreading rumours that he had a criminal past. This is completely untrue. Richard has never even been arrested. Upon arriving in Liverpool for filming, Sam told Richard that a female friend would be joining him, but did not explain the context. Later that evening, Sam told Richard he'd been catfished and he was repulsed by this woman because she had cellulite. Richard was very confused because Sam had never had a woman attend with him apart from his wife.
So I just poo-pooed it. I've never seen this woman. But see her the next day. And I'm looking at her and I'm looking at him. I can't say what she did, but let's say this woman was, just to give you context for how crazy it is, she was a professional high-level athlete, let's say, who was in exceptional shape. Sam Vaknin is not. And so I'm looking at her, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, in my head I'm thinking, are you here against your will? Were you paid to be? Because it didn't make sense. It just didn't make sense. Like what he told me, how attractive she was. I'm looking at him. Whatever. Let's just do the shoot.
They had a tight timescale of 3 days to shoot the documentary about social media. And Richard was more focused on getting the job done than managing Sam's visitor. But having been rejected by Sam, the woman ended up bonding with a crew member. And a couple of days in, they ended up in bed together. This crew member, it turns out, was in a long-term relationship. So Richard was upset with the entire messy situation, which derailed the shoot. This was likely a scenario which you've heard discussed before, where Sam pushes a woman to sleep with someone else and then punishes her if she does.
We didn't get our last 4 hours of the shoot because Sam went into just a rage. But eventually I managed to get, the girl's okay. The guys who've done the shoot, I can let them go. But Sam's beside himself with fury. And Sam makes a huge scene in a restaurant. He's screaming at her. He's screaming at me. He's screaming at the waiter. And I was like, I'm never working with this guy again. A week later, he messages me and he said, I want to apologize to you for what happened. I dragged you into a situation that wasn't yours, blah, blah, blah. You've blown it. You contrived the situation. You made it the mess it was. I'm out. I don't even know what I'm going to do with the footage now because we didn't finish the documentary. And there was radio silence from March of that year until September when I'm living in Ibiza and I get a phone call from the police.
The police were calling in relation to accusations of an online smear campaign against the partner of the crew member who had slept with a woman. His partner was heavily pregnant at the time.
Somebody had waited until the third trimester and then bombarded this poor girl with the details of her boyfriend's sexual betrayal in Liverpool earlier that year. They didn't just do it direct and personally to her. They did it publicly and tagged her on Facebook. They tagged her on Instagram. They tagged the director. They made a whole scene, I believe, to create as much distress as possible, to raise the possibility as high as possible that she would miscarry. And so
nothing,
the police...
This had nothing to do with you.
No, the police are saying, did you do this? And I went, no. I'm out here living my best life in Ibiza. I'm training twice a day. I'm not drinking. I'm not doing drugs. I've met a girl. I've fallen in love. I don't know what this is. They said... The people who are complaining about this said it's probably a guy called Sam Vaknin. Do you know him? I said, yeah. And they said, would he do this? And I said, maybe his wife would. But I don't think Sam would. Maybe his wife has found out about it. And she's done this. And they said, based on what you know of Sam Vaknin, do you believe he is capable of doing this? And I said, it's not my opinion that he's done this, but... yes, I think he's capable of doing this. And so he's wanted in the UK on an open inquiry for questioning and hasn't entered the country since. So yeah, red flags. Yeah, there was red flags and I should have left it there. Fast forward. Oh, I didn't speak to him for longer. I didn't speak to him for 2 years. So then we get to the end of 2021. And I am in a dire situation, psychologically and emotionally, because I'm in another mess of a relationship. And I'd basically had effectively a full breakdown. And I couldn't understand what was happening. And I had questions. And I thought, only the devil can answer these questions. So I reached out to him and I told him the truth. I said, I'm desperate and I need answers. And he said, I'm in a similar situation and I have questions for you too. So at the end of 2021, we reinitiated contact. And we had a long conversation and it was... what I now know, I don't want to confuse people listening. He was accusing one of his targets of abusing him. And so he was telling me stories of her abuse of him. there was effectively reactive abuse. So yes, she did say these things, and yes, she did do these things, but she did it in response to the grooming, the coercion, and whatever else. So I'll stop there. That's the timeline. Yes, red flags. Yes, 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 red flags. But nothing yet that made me think he was actively and systematically coercing therapeutic clients into sex. Nothing, nothing yet.
Doesn't this sound familiar? At a point of vulnerability, at a point of crisis, reaching out to the devil for help despite the risk. I know this is a long and complicated story, but the devil is in the detail, figuratively and literally. Sam creates chaos, drama, confusion. Lines are blurred, boundaries pushed, and people in his sphere cross lines they thought they'd never cross. So they take responsibility, blame, and shame for their part in the dance macabre. But the opportunistic puppet master is the only one pulling the strings. In the next episode of The Narcissist Playbook, Sam breaks down and cries on camera.
I'm very angry at not having ever existed, because I think I had many gifts.
Richard's realization of how far he'd been sucked in.
It's a cult, and I've been brainwashed, and he is the cult leader, and I have been I've been a cult member.
And the horror as he learned more and more from the victims of Sam.
He's not only sick in ways I didn't know he could be, he's sick in ways I didn't know a human being could be.
The Storyteller Narcissist Playbook is written, produced and edited by me, Isla Traquair, and is the fourth in the Storyteller series. You can see videos, evidence, analysis and more on my Patreon. The link is in the show notes and is a great way for you to show your support for this independent production. Another way to show your support for free is to like, review, share and subscribe. A few clicks makes a huge difference and lets people find this important story. If you've been affected by narcissistic abuse, there are links for support in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening.